This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Thanks for joining us on another great episode of Baseball Outside the Box, the show that brings you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge, the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, from the studios of the Lineup Media Group, and also behind the scenes, our producer, Brian Crock, who makes everything happen and sounds outstanding. Welcome, everybody, on Facebook. Great to see you. We already have people joining us. During this time, if you have any questions, just type on the bottom of the Facebook page. We will try to get your questions answered. Hello, amigo Caliendo. I see that Mrs. Martinez or Mr. Martinez. Glad to see you on the show. We are live on Facebook, so make sure you ask us some questions. And don't forget, go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. If you're a current listener, a loyal one, we really thank you, and we hope you can give us a great review. That really helps the show continue. If you just joined our show, boy, thanks for joining. We love to have you. Go to iTunes and Stitcher, and you can join the show for free. That's what's great about it. Bob Specchio from Elmwood Park, good to see you on the show, on live on Facebook. When you go to the website, iTunes and Stitcher, hit them both or either one, whichever one you use, join the show. It's free. You'll get all updates. All the time there's a new show. We got some great shows coming up. We got an outstanding show today. Our listeners, you are our audience. You are the ones who make this show happen. Joe Caparelli, a good Italian, another baseball coach, joining the show. And we are all over social media. Don't forget, at Twitter, we are at Baseball Out. We have all kinds of information. We've got videos, tips, you name it. It's a great way to interact with us. We love seeing you on Twitter. And we've obviously got Facebook. Go to Facebook /baseballoutsidethebox.com, and we will interact with you also on Facebook. But one thing you'd really do us a favor on is all the social media, forward it to as many people as you can so we can get the show out. It is a worldwide show, and we've got a worldwide audience, so we're excited. Now, let me tell you about today's show. We always have a unique show for you. I can see right now, again, Jeffrey Macias, how are you? Herb Furkenbrock, good friend, good. Glad you guys are joining us on live on Facebook on Baseball Outside the Box. Let me tell you about our guest today. It is going to be a great show. Today's a special show because it incorporates all kinds of things when it comes to hitting. But you know what's great? It's not going to be your typical hitting talk all the time. Boy, sometimes I've been in the game 38 years. It drives me crazy. Mechanics, launch angles, this, that. There's so much information out there. We're going to be talking to a guy that is I'll tell you about him, but just a great, great hitting coach and consultant. But he's a mentor. He's a teacher. He's a, you name it. I mean, he could teach anybody, anywhere. He's got some great things when it comes to hitting. We'll tell you about that. We are excited about the show. Let me tell you about Kevin Wilson. Kevin's been a hitting consultant for over 15 years. He's one of the most sought out, respected hitting consultants in the game. The author of a popular hitting book called The Good Hitting Book. You got to get it. It's on Amazon. These things are selling constantly. Now, let me tell you what Amazon, some of the people have said on about the book. It is short and right to the point. There's no mechanics involved. He presents ideas and thought processes in ways that aren't usually taught. You will hear a lot about the mental game of hitting. I know how you build relationships with players. There's so much there. Currently, Kevin works with over 20 different major league organization players. They're in the minor leagues and major league players. So he works with the best, but he's also worked and currently works with young players also. Kevin was the hitting coach for Team USA, USA Baseball's gold medal team, 18U, that won the gold medal in Taiwan. I was fortunate enough to be there to see Kevin win that gold medal. He spent 5 years in professional baseball with the Pirates and the Chicago White Sox. And let me tell you, this is the reason you're going to love this show. Let me tell you about this. One of the reasons he's one of the most sought-out hitting guys is because the word is out that he takes pride in making sure that every hitter is treated as an individual, not just hitters, but players that are treated just like they, you know, you want to be treated. He's a unique, he has that unique ability to speak the player's language and translate information from other coaches, teams, and organizations. Now, a quote from Kevin, this will tell you why he is so good. We enjoy pushing hitters to think in order to truly develop. The ultimate goal is to know thyself. By putting the onus on the player, we aim to show them how to take ownership of their swing, approach, and ultimately their career. So it's not just about hitting. We're going to be talking hitting, but we're going to be talking about life skills in general. Now, he's a sought-out keynote speaker who is part of a foundation called the Cannonball Foundation. Is dedicated to shaping lifelong learners and leaders throughout the joy of baseball. Kevin will be telling us about that foundation. And I've listened to every show because these are two good Italians. The KWB podcast, there hasn't a show I have missed. They have an outstanding podcast along with Joe Ferraro, another great Italian. He does a great job also. So, hey, enough about all this information. Now let's hear from the man, our good friend, Kevin Wilson. Kevin, what's up, buddy?
Pete, thank you so much for having me on. This is, where's the gravy? You know, where's the antipasto? So, like, let's sit down and have a bite to eat and talk some shop today.
Yeah, we should have done this in the studio, eating pasta and drinking a little wine.
We would make Joe too jealous on our KWB radio podcast. But thanks again. So grateful for the opportunity to be with you today, Pete.
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, let's do this. It's a thrill to have you. You know, and our audience, just so you know, Kevin Wilson, you know, what's great about him is he's genuine. That's what the players love about him. Coaches love about him. I've seen him talk to groups. He's genuine. He's honest. You know, he's doing the right thing. He's doing it for the right reason. So he's one of those good guys that the reason he's been successful is because of those reasons. So, hey, let's do this, Kevin. Let's get started with this. You know, we're going to talk about hitting, but tell us a little bit about, you know, tell our audience what you're currently doing now, and then we'll jump into the rest of the stuff.
Sure. This is, you know, we started Kevin Wilson Baseball in 2001. So since then, we've been helping hitters and, like you said, helping them with their mindsets and their person before ever their swings and them as a player. So we've been very fortunate to be able to grow throughout the years. I often think back to the first hitting lesson I ever did when we had the baseball academy back in 2001, and Pete, I think I messed up more guys than I helped.
Yeah, we've all done that.
Just thinking back to it, and so it's definitely been a journey. I love Cervantes' quote, "The journey is better than the end," because I, as you agree with, I know since you and I have talked about this at length off air, but you know, it's the journey, and always with that growth mindset and growing and learning and listening and trying to pick out pieces that you think could make you, I'm going to steal Joe's new line, 1% better every day. And that's what I love about what I'm doing. So currently, where we're at right now, as you said, I'm a private hitting consultant to major league and minor league players. So I'm the guy behind the scenes. No one knows who I am, which is great, because it's not about me. It's about the player. You never see me on TV. Those guys get every ounce of credit because they're doing it, and you know, just very fortunate to continue to be in the game in that capacity. But I think my why has changed, because when I was a player, obviously, as it should be, you're trying to get to the big leagues, you're trying to be the best you can be. And for me, my why now is to help people. How can I help people? I get up every morning and say, you know, I thank God for another day, and I say, how can I help somebody today? And baseball happens to be the platform where I get to help people grow and understand themselves better. And oh, by the way, they happen to be baseball players too. So I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to be in a sport that I love, be around people that inspire me, they grow me. That I always say that these guys, they teach me more than I ever teach them, and I truly mean that. And I think if as a leader or a coach or even as a person, if you listen, if you try to be the best listener you can, I don't care who you're with, someone's going to teach you something that day. So just blessed and honored to be able to do what I'm doing today.
Awesome. You know what? When you're right, when you get to do something you really love, It is outstanding, and you are helping a tremendous amount of people. Steve Markey, welcome on Facebook Live, along with Pete Durkovic. Thanks, guys, for joining the show. If you have any questions, please write them down on the Facebook Live screen there. We will try our best to ask Kevin Wilson your question. Now, here's what's great, Kev. You use the word listen, and, I just have a feeling that, the real good ones are great listeners. And you always hear that all the time. Now, I'm also a believer that, just because you believe in that doesn't mean you're doing it. Tell us what are the skills of listening? How do you become a good listener? Why should you become a good listener? What's the benefits, and how do you use that in your line of work?
Well, I will tell you this. If you're not Italian, you're ahead of the game already.
That's the problem.
Because we always like to, it's everything's a conversation, right? Everybody's trying to talk at once, and that's great. But so for me, it was tough. It was tough early on to really, I understood it, right? Like you're saying, I understood that you have to listen in order to learn. But it was really hard to implement that. And some days I still catch myself at times when you get excited and you want to put your input. But it's just like any other skill set. It's a choice that you make. Mm-hmm. It's a choice in terms of listening is, fighting the urge to say something and knowing that, hey, you're going to mess up along the way. But the more conscious you are about it, the more purpose you have, understanding that I'm going to let that person finish his sentence, or I'm going to let that person explain, even if it's something I don't agree with. Give them the platform and let them. Because, again, if you're going to have a conversation, I'm not talking about a debate, because I think that's where a lot of people get wrong, is they think everything's a debate. No, it's a conversation. And to be a world-class listener, in order to say something in return, you have to know, in my opinion at least, you have to know where that person is coming from. So there's two things to listening that I found that's helped. Ask questions. Don't give answers. Mm-hmm. So the more questions that you ask, that gives you the ability to listen. But don't listen to reply, as I did when I was younger. And I think a lot of us make that mistake at times. Don't listen to reply, but listen to understand. And the more questions that you ask and the more that you listen to understand, then you're going to be able to reply in a way that has a lot of purpose behind it and meaning. And because you've now digested that and understood where that person's coming from, now that turns into a meaningful conversation, not a debate, like a social media debate back and forth.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you what. Before we started the show, I was preparing yesterday, and one of the things I told myself is, I'm going to be interviewing Kevin Wilson. Well, I've listened to Kevin Wilson about 50 interviews, and I better have my best listening skills on, because he's going to force you to listen on because of the things he says all the time. And I think that's what makes you a quality, mentor, coach, consultant. Am I going too far with that?
No, I appreciate the kind words. That means a lot. Thank you.
Well, listening skills aren't easy. Now, I'm going to jump a little bit because one of the things I want to talk about, today's society, we talk about winning and losing. That seems to be the number one goal all the time. And we have a lot of coaches around the world, and I want to thank Anthony Donato. How are you? Another good Italian joining the show on Facebook Live. I want to, talk to all our coaches, players, and parents around the world and in the U.S. that are listening to the show. And I want you to talk a little bit about, where winning comes from and how you have to deal with losing. Give them a little bit of advice on, why all this is important.
That's a great question, Pete. That's a one to unpack there, as Joe likes to say. But I will start with failure first, because I think And this is where I got tripped up too when I went to play college baseball, because, I'm from Philadelphia, and, baseball in Philadelphia at that time, 20-something years ago, was not a great breeding ground for baseball. We're mostly known for a basketball town. And in the same time coming up, Kobe Bryant, same grade, and Rip mm-hmm. Hamilton, and basketball players like that. I mean, there was, Rasheed Wallace. We had a lot of good basketball people in this town. But when it came to baseball, and it was easy to be good in this city. I mean, I went from Philadelphia Player of the Year which I got that award my senior year of high school in June. And a couple months later, my first fall practice at the University of Cincinnati, where I went from the best player to the worst player. I was getting my doors blown off by 94 miles an hour. I'd never seen 94 miles an hour before from a 21-year-old grown man in my eyes, it looked like. So I want to start with failure for the reason that it's really easy to understand winning. You think you have it all figured out. You think that you understand what winning is all about or what it takes to win, but you don't. What it does to you is it's a false sense of hope or a false sense of truth that, listen, in order to win, you have to understand how to fail. And the fail part needs to come before you ever have an opportunity to learn how to win. Because if you don't learn how to fail, no shot you ever get to the point where you learn how to win again. So for me, I love when guys fail. And people look at me like I'm crazy sometimes. But I even with the guys that are making millions of dollars in the big leagues, I want them to fail. I also want them to succeed. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But especially when they get up there early, I want to see them fail. Because it's the old adage, I'm sure you definitely know, and maybe some of our listeners know as well, but you know, to be able to be established in the big leagues, it takes 1,500 at-bats to be established. So 500 at-bats, which roughly, for those who maybe don't know, if you play every day in the big leagues from April to October, that's 700 at-bats. If you're playing every day and you're getting 4 or 5 at-bats a night, that's 700 at-bats. Kids in high school right now, they don't even have 700 at-bats in their entire career, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, unless you're playing 80 games on an 8-year travel team, but that's a different story. But 500 at-bats in the big leagues to punch the league, meaning they're going to challenge you with a fastball with 98, 96. They're going to challenge you, see if you can hit a big league fastball. You're going to have 500 at-bats to punch the league. The next 500 is now the league has an opportunity to punch you back, meaning make adjustments. Okay, now he hits the fastball. Let's see if you can hit this breaking ball or changeup or this pitch in this spot. And then if you can get through, because that second 500 is failure. It's struggling. It's the sophomore slump, quote unquote. All these people that is the Kyle Schwarbers.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, okay, now he didn't get 500 at bats yet. I mean, he's within his first 500. He's a little different story because of the injuries and what he's had. But now it's all those things combined. If you can get through that second 500 of failure, because the league is punching you back now, then if you can get through that, now you have another 500 to finally punch the league back and solidify yourself in there. So the reason why I say that you need the failure in order to understand the success is because that's where the true learning comes from. As you know, Pete,
sure,
learning comes from failure. If I can get through and understand what that is, put my mind around it, understand why I'm failing, understand who I am as a person, a failure brings all these other extracurricular stuff to the program. Then when I get that figured out and I go through that and I become grateful for my situation, and I look at my career and myself and my life through a different lens, now I'm better prepared to go back in. And now when I punch the league again, now I'm more of a complete player. So these parents that put their son on one team or another or don't allow them to fail, they're setting that kid up to have an adulthood that is always relying on somebody else to help them or fix them, or they're always going to complain about somebody not giving them a fair share, rather than, hey, figure it out, grin and bear it, like we all did growing up, like life's not fair. So that's the long-winded kind of answer to your question.
Well, that's great. And we have Rob Curry on live on Facebook. Thanks for joining us, Rob. Where you're listening to Kevin Wilson, consultant to minor league, major league players when it comes to hitting, but also the mental game, the mentoring of major league, minor league players, young kids. We're talking hitting, but this isn't your normal hitting talk. We're not talking just, you know, mechanics. We're talking about the mental game more than anything. You know, Kevin, here's the area I wanted to talk a little bit more about. When you talk about the failure aspect, give us an idea, give our audience an idea. You know, let's take a young kid, when he's failing a lot, what are some recommendations? I mean, it's easy to say, just deal with it. But what are some recommendations on how to deal with it?
Sure. I think that could be for a whole another podcast as well. I mean, I think, just to try to kind of bring some of the top points to it, for me, I mean, first of all, tell them that it's going to happen. Like, I think sometimes that we create this illusion as parents. I'm a parent of an 8-year-old. Mm-hmm. You create these illusions of, Everything's going to be okay. And it's all going to be, you know, roses and rainbows. But no, I think at appropriate times with appropriate tone and the communication that you use, explain to them, again, you're teaching, baseball is such a, and hitting is such a great tool for life lessons. I mean, that's what I use my platform for in baseball, is to teach life lessons to these guys who are not going to play until they're 60. This is not the PGA and the senior tour. You can't play until you're 70 and make money.
That's right.
You got a small window for a young player. Yeah, for a young player, just to remind them, like, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just going to give you a heads up. You're going to strike out 3 times in a row, 4 times. Hey, Dad did it. You know, my son will ask me time to time, Dad, what'd you do with this and that? And I'll tell him flat out, like, hey, man, I made 3 errors in a game, most I ever did. Lost the game on the last one. I struck out 4 times. I've also hit the game-winning home run where it was my 5th at-bat, and I struck out 4 times before that. I want to show him that it's not all roses and rainbows, and I want to allow him permission to fail. I think permission is a huge word when it comes to kids, and I think just people in general. Sometimes we don't feel we have permission to do anything, in this case, to fail. We think that because of all the things like Instagram or social media, all the pictures look great. There's filters. Everything is perfect. Everything, if we don't like it, we can change it. But you know what? That's not baseball. You're not going to get 4 hits a game. So I think giving kids and young people permission to fail with the backing of and the knowledge that, hey, it's going to happen. So when it happens, it's not a personal reflection on you and how bad you are as a player or your skill sets or you as a person. It's something that happens. And now because of that, when it happens, we're going to have a mindset of, okay, what went wrong? And then how are we going to fix it? And then even though we're going to fix it, it's going to happen again down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're going to equip with better understanding. So I think it's taking, I'm big, P, you know this, I'm big on all it takes is 5 minutes to change someone's life.
Yep.
And a 5-minute conversation with a young person, with your son, with your daughter, with a big leaguer. I teach them all the same. You know, they're just talking different languages at different points in their lives. But I love the opportunity to take 5 minutes with somebody and share with them, in this case, what we're talking about. Hey, you have permission to fail. Like, you're not a failure because of it. But when you do, we're going to talk about it and see what we can do to work to get better with that and can keep growing on our journey together.
I love your answers because I think this is going to help people all over the world understand with how to work with their kids when it comes to failure. Dan DiCaprio, former Lewis University baseball coach, welcome on Facebook. Tony Garofalo, former Cubs Major League trainer, great friends, welcome on Facebook. We are on with Kevin Wilson. If you'd like to get a hold of Kevin Wilson, go to kwbaseball.com. That's his website and also his Twitter, kwbaseball. He's got some great stuff. And don't forget the Good Hitting Book. It's one of the most popular hitting books out there. It's not about mechanics. There's so much great information in there. So we're going to continue our talk with Kevin. And as we get closer to the hitting part, even though this all relates to the hitting, because obviously, you know, hitting, you know, is the one area that you're going to fail at the most of the time in the game of baseball. And that was some great advice. You know, I've spent a lot of time in Japan, Kevin, with a lot of players and training, and I know it's a different culture, but and I agree with you on this part, and I want you to explain it. You believe that when you're working with hitters or anybody in general, you're creating individuals. You're not creating cookie cutters. Now, the Japanese, in some ways, have gone the other way. They create cookie cutters. That's a whole different culture, and when it starts and all that. And again, that could be a whole different podcast. But explain what you mean by creating individuals and not cookie cutters.
Certainly, I'm a big believer that God gave us different talents, and I think this is where I got tripped up as well when I was younger. At times where I tried to be like somebody else. I think we can all relate to that in our lives, not just in baseball. And again, I was a switch hitter. I had 2 different swings. I had 2 different personalities, 2 different approaches. I was bipolar. I just wasn't diagnosed as one. I was just a switch hitter. So I knew that I had to be different. But when I was trying to be somebody else prior to that discovery, I just wasn't being the best version of myself, and therefore the results weren't there. And it was just kind of like that aha moment where, oh, that's why. Like, I need to be myself. Like, God gave me talents, and I need to be able to understand them and use them. I mean, he gave them to me for a reason. And so that's where it all started, with the individualization and really understanding that, hey, listen, everybody's got special and unique traits. They have special and unique talents. Going back to being a world-class listener, I need to ask questions, and I need the player to tell me how he likes to do it, what his strengths are, where he thinks that he is really good at in one area or the other. And then, of course, what he wants to work on and some of his weaknesses. But I'm a big believer. I think a lot of people worry so much about their weaknesses that they don't pay attention to mastering their strengths. I mean, for example, you know, David Ortiz, he's obviously retired now, but I think, you know, he's a example. We can use many examples, but him one because of the polarizing figure he is. And, you know, he's more recently retired. But you don't know David Ortiz for being a good base runner. Mm-hmm. You don't know David Ortiz for being, you know, he's a pretty good base runner. If you watch the game closely, you'll be around him. But he's not known for being a good first baseman. What is he known for? Being a hitter.
Sure.
And so he's mastered his strength. And he's mastered who he is. And he's figured out over time, because it does take time, to figure out what you want to do. So when you individualize and customize your teachings to that individual, what you're doing is you're telling them, again, going back to that permission, it's okay to be the best version of yourself. Hmm. You know, you don't have to look like Josh Donaldson. You don't have to look like anybody else. I mean, find out what you do well, and then let's work on, with a lot of purpose and focus and understand why you're doing what you're doing, turn yourself into the best version of yourself and see where that takes you.
Outstanding. Now we have Cone Gertz from Belgium. Welcome. Ed Campanello, welcome on Facebook Live. You're listening to Kevin Wilson, hitting consultant for minor league, major league players, the author of the good hitting book, something you got to get on Amazon. And if you need to reach him, kwbaseball.com and his Twitter at kwbaseball. They have an outstanding podcast that also you need to listen to. You can check that out on the website. Now, we're getting a little closer to starting to get into the hitting part. You know, one of the things I just wanted to jump back in, because I wrote a note on this, and, you know, you really hit this well. You know, I haven't heard it this way. You mentioned the 1,500 ABs, which I called ABs. You know, for novices like me, you know, I have to remind myself. You know, Schwarber was a great example, because that young man, they haven't given him a chance. You know, now the Cubs understand it, but sometimes the media and the fans may not quite understand that, you know, he's not really there yet. I mean, you know, he did some things in the World Series that were outstanding, but then, you know, as you consistently hit in the big leagues, they know how to catch up and make adjustments. As pitchers, you have to make adjustments. You know, that's a great analysis that I think if fans understood that, they'd be a little bit more sympathetic.
Yeah, I think, like I mentioned this, I was talking about this on a recent pod that I was a guest on as well, and we were kind of talking about the same situation where it's all about experiences. I think in life, you know, wisdom comes from experience. Knowledge comes from textbooks. Mm-hmm. You know, so for Kyle to, as we were just talking about him, for Kyle to go through these experiences he's going through right now, he is creating a Rolodex of wisdom because of the experiences he's going through, the highs and the lows. And the patience is normally there with the club. Sometimes it's not, but normally with a guy like him, there'll be patience. They just came off a World Series. They have like another 3 or 5 year window, kind of like the Phillies did after 08, and they'll keep on guys for a while. Mm-hmm. But my point being is that by going through these things, we want to gain as much experience as we can to gain that wisdom. And I think in today's society, Pete, with everything instant gratification, we can pull things up real quick. You know, if you don't know what something is, you just rely on that Google machine, and it'll tell you the answer within a couple seconds. I myself get caught in that sometimes, but I feel like my generation – it was like your generation growing up, and like we had the card catalogs in the library.
Yeah,
I didn't have cable in the house. You know, rotary phones. You went outside and played. I don't even know how we survived in the world back then, but My point being is I think our generations have a little more patience than maybe the newer generations that I see, because we grew up not having the information right at our fingertips.
Right.
Sometimes we had to wait. Like, I remember going to the library, picking out 5 books for a project, coming home not knowing if the answer is in those 5 books. And if it wasn't, what do? Gotta go back to the library, put them away, and then get another 5. So that's the thing, I think, where the fans, it's they don't have the experience of being in the big leagues and facing big league pitching, and I totally get it. I certainly didn't have that when I was growing up. I thought Mike Schmidt made it look so easy. I thought Larry Bowa was the best shortstop in the world. I could go down the list, and in the early 90s, too, and Darren Dalton, Lenny Dykstra, and all those guys, like, I thought that baseball was just, you just, like, showed up at the park and you played. I had no experience, and I had no wisdom of what it actually took to play every single day in the big league. So I can't fault the fans, because I was like that one time. I'm very fortunate to have access and have the experiences I've had to understand, much like you, that that's why I say hitting is simple. It's just not that easy.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was just about to ask you that, because, and before I do, all our audiences around the world, don't forget, we love getting your emails. Email us at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Email us about this show, any questions you might have. We love getting your emails. And don't forget, we're also on Twitter, @baseballout. And connect with us on Twitter, and you'll get a lot of great information when it comes to baseball development. Well, you mentioned the hitting is simple. It's just not that easy. Let's talk about that. You're starting with a young man for the first time. Where's the fine line between the mechanics and the non-thinking part, or the thinking part when it comes to non-mechanics? Where's the fine line there? Because you see a lot of kids that I do a lot of tryouts, just a lot of kids, man, you can tell they're worried about the mechanics when they're swinging the bat during the tryout. And, you know, explain to our audience, once you're done with the mechanics, what's next?
Well, I think the number one most important part for me when I meet a person for the first time and I'm working with them, whether it was back in the day when I had the baseball academy, it was an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old or 18-year-old, or now, you know, with a professional ball player.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like we were talking about before, I am going to ask you a ton of questions, and I'm going to find out like I was talking about before, what your strengths and weaknesses are, what you value.
Mm-hmm.
Do you value mechanics? Do you value approach? Do you value both? Have you been, like, where have you been taught before? Who's taught you before? What do they teach you? What do you believe in? Before I'm ever going to suggest something, because I never make anybody do anything. Again, going back to the playing days, I always hated when coaches would force me into swings that I didn't want to do and I knew that wouldn't work for me. A, because I tried it before, it didn't work. Or B, I had enough knowledge in my swing knowing that that's just not going to work for me. That might work for this guy over here, but not for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the utmost importance, before I ever give a suggestion to a player, I need to know, and I need to be comfortable with myself, knowing enough information about that person, knowing what language they speak in terms of terminology. I need to know what they believe in. I need to know also why they're doing what they're doing. And then what I always ask them, I was like, if you're going to write a scouting report for you, on yourself, what are those things that you would write? Like, what do you do well? And then the second question I ask them on top of that is, 4 years from now, what do you want that scouting report to look like? So if we're talking about young people, if you're a freshman in high school, what's your scouting report? Oh, I'm a gap-to-gap hitter. I control the barrel real well. I got good plate discipline. Great. What do you want that to look like 4 years from now when you're stepping on a campus for the first time at college?
Hmm.
Most players have no idea. And you know what, Pete? I didn't either. I remember Mike Lum was the hitting coordinator for the White Sox. He's with the Pirates, I think, now. But Lummer was one of the best guys I've ever had in pro ball outside of Charlie Manuel. But Lummer asked, hey, what's your scouting? What do you want your scouting report to look like 5 years from now when you're in the big leagues? I was like, I just want to get there. And so, you know, I can relate. I was 21 at that time. And so I can totally relate. So for me, when you first meet somebody, ask questions. And I always warn guys that are not used to being around me. I said, listen, I'm just warning you, I'm going to ask a ton of questions, because my ultimate goal is not to teach you. My ultimate goal is to listen to you and then use your own words and say them back to you and maybe a way that makes more sense to you, or just regurgitating information that you already told me that you already knew. But sometimes as human beings, when we hear from somebody else, you know, then it makes sense.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of where I start.
And what about now? You take a young man. He's let's say it's during the season, and you know he's struggling a little bit. He's coming to you. I know they can talk to you on Skype, on phone. You communicate with a lot of your clients all the time. But let's say you've got him in the cage and they're struggling a little bit. Where do you start with that and understanding why they're struggling? Is it the swing? Is it something else?
I would say it depends, and every individual's different. But I think across the board, just young and old, I would say 90% of the time, you look at what they're swinging at, not as much as their swing.
Interesting.
Meaning, if you're chasing breaking balls in the dirt and you're striking out a bunch, but when you were going good, you were hitting fastballs down the middle, and therefore you didn't even get to that breaking ball. Because the old adage, how do you hit the breaking ball? Don't miss the fastball.
Yeah.
So if you're looking, if you have a good approach at the plate and you're sticking to it and you're hitting your pitch in your zone, whatever that may be, different for other guys, but majority of it is fastball, especially with less than two strikes. And all of a sudden now I see you on film and watching you on TV, or you're telling me that, man, I'm chasing a lot of breaking balls in the dirt. I don't know why. Hmm. And then from there, I take that and I just walk it back. Okay, so how did you get to that two strike count? Or how did you get to that point? Again, question on question on question on question. Because if I tell you something to do, you're not going to buy into it.
Yeah.
But if you discover it on your own, again, human nature, if you discover it on your own, what do? We buy into it. We think it's ours. And I want guys to think they came up with the answer themselves, because, in fact, they did. But I just had to prod them along a little bit, because just asking a question. And if I'm really dialed in that day, I try to ask a better question on top of that question to lead them to figure it out on their own. And all of a sudden, they're flying on cloud nine, they're back, and what did I do? I really didn't do anything. I just asked them a question. They figured it out on their own. So that's kind of how, you look at the approach most of the time and say, what are you swinging at? And if you're starting to expand the zone, your mechanics get jacked up. So how you can fix your mechanics a lot of the time is fixing your approach.
Well, I love the part that you keep going over and over and over again about the asking the questions, because, you know, all those questions you're asking them also, as you're saying, gets them to think, you know, and gets them to listen. And I think that's a big key, boy, and all of a sudden you're training yourself. That's outstanding. Welcome, Joe Morello, Gary Rudin to Facebook. You are on Baseball Outside the Box podcast. We are with Kevin Wilson. If you have any questions for Kevin, write them at the bottom of the screen on Facebook. Anything about hitting, this is an outstanding talk. Now, here's the part also I want to ask you about, because, you know, when we talk about hitting, we've got to talk about, you hear a lot of times, you hear a coach saying, you know, why just swing at that? Well, you know, the process begins at release point, I'm assuming. You know, if they pick the ball up wrong, if they don't pick up the speed, the type of pitch, location, you know, their swing starts at a certain point, at least before the ball is even halfway. So, you know, how important in your training is the visual aspect of picking up the ball and the location and the speed and all that?
Oh, it's a lot of it. It really is. And it's, as a switch hitter, I learned this early on, and you know, I don't know if there's any switch hitters listening out there, and if there is, you probably can relate to this as well. But, you know, your dominant eye, you're going to have a dominant eye. In my case, it was my right eye was dominant. So when I was batting left-handed, obviously my right eye was front and center on the pitcher, and I saw the ball really well. You know, at times, you know, there were times where I did it, but in terms of seeing it because my dominant eye was in the front, I had a better chance. But sometimes if I was hitting left-handed for a couple days, or I didn't take BP right-handed because of an injury or whatnot, or it was a show-and-go day, and, you know, we weren't taking many flips from the other side because I knew they had right-handers starting and they had an entire right-handed bullpen. When I would go on the right side after a couple days off, I had to make sure my entire head was turned towards the pitcher. Because, and I found that out during BP, because you can get lazy with it, with the left-handed pitcher, because you don't necessarily have to turn that much, because the lefty's coming out from over there as a righty. But when I was taking BP off a right-handed BP thrower, I had to make sure that my head was turned, almost like Matt Williams. If people remember, Matt Williams used to chew on his on his shoulder just to make sure both eyes were on it. And I had to make sure I did that at times too, because eyesight is important. Sometimes you don't think that we need two eyes on it, but you look back and say, I'm trying to do an athletic movement, see a baseball coming at me that I can barely see anyway. And if I don't do it, it's hard enough to do it with two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm facing sideways, there's a greater chance I'm going to try to do this thing with one eye. And you'd be amazed, Pete, that how many guys that I'll just simply, I'll watch video and I'll say, hey, man, do you close your left eye? Let's picture a right-handed hitter. And he's right eye dominant.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, hey, look at, close your left eye and look at the pitcher. Can you see him? And if you close your left eye and your right eye and your whole head is not turned, you can't see the pitcher. You'll see the second baseman.
Right.
And so it's amazing just being able to turn your head, and all of a sudden guys are like, wow, I see the ball now. Because now you got two eyes instead of one, especially your dominant. So, again, going back to your question of vision, it is. And a lot of the times you can help your vision by understanding where you need the baseball. And I'll try to do my best to explain this over the podcast. But
sure.
we've got some pictures on my website and other things that we put out. I can even send them to you if you want to post them later.
Absolutely.
But we have what was called a seven ball drill that we use. And we place seven baseballs down in front of the plate, one being the inside corner, seven being the outside corner. If you guys can picture it, the number four ball is the center cut of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask guys, because we can't cover the entire plate. I used to think this too when I was younger. You can't do it. Yes, you can put a bat on the ball, but we're talking about driving the baseball. And because in the first chapter of the book, the Good Batting Book that you were mentioning before, I talk about what is your view from the batter's box? Because I bring guys out to the empty field and they say, listen, I said, look at when no one's on the field. I said, look at the plate, it's 17 inches. I said, now look at your whole field. So whether it's a little league field or a major league field, either way, look how much empty fair territory there is. And I ask them, what's easier, to throw a strike over 17 inches or to hit a ball in fair territory?
Hmm.
And they're going to say, well, hit a ball in fair territory. But we don't see that when we get to the plate. We see all seven other guys trying to catch our baseball.
Yeah.
And we think this plate is like the size of America at times. But when I line up the seven baseballs across, my goal for them is to pick out at least four baseballs in a row. So two-thirds of the plate, where their swing plays naturally. I want them to understand where it plays naturally. How do we do that? I line the seven baseballs up. I throw them BP, or chair BP, where I just sit on a chair from like a front toss station and throw overhand, which I like a lot more nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I use that more often. Some of my older clients that are in late 30s, they like to do the front toss still, and that's fine. Everybody's different, like we talked about.
Uh-huh.
But I'll throw, and I want them to swing in everything like you hit a run. And when they hit the baseball, I don't care where it goes, by the way. When they hit the baseball, I want them to tell me, over which ball did you make contact? So if I throw it down the middle and they made contact over four, I want them to tell me four ball. And you'd be amazed, too, that even pro guys, they hit a ball and they think it's a four, and all of a sudden it's a six or it's a two. Because this is the other part to it, too, Pete, is it depends on where you stand in the box, because this is all relating to your vision now.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you stand in the box. So if we're talking about Anthony Rizzo, if we're talking the Chicago Cubs,
mm-hmm.
Anthony obviously stands on top of the plate. He didn't always used to do that. But now, him standing on top of the plate, and you may have talked about this before, but his outside corner, the outside corner on the seven ball drill where we line everything up, that's a seven ball. But to Rizzo, that's a four ball.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, that picture.
Absolutely.
So where he stands, close to the plate, he's using the bat, even if he's choking up, whatever, that's his four ball, because people are going outside. So he said, well, if they're going to keep peppering me outside, I'm going to move up. I don't want to try to hit a seven ball. My swing plays through whatever that is for him, but everybody's swing plays down the middle. But your down the middle doesn't always match up with the plate's down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do that, at the end, I tell them, after they're calling out what ball they hit it over, and they get better over time because now they're understanding where the plate is, but then where their plate is, where their middle is in relationship to where they're standing. At the end of it, I do it for, I don't know, I give them 20, 30 pitches. I let them have, you know, do their own thing. And I'm not teaching them at this point. I'm just letting them call out. Again, I want them to teach themselves. Mm-hmm. At the end of it, I say, okay, over what four baseballs of those seven does your swing play naturally? And they'll tell me. So let's just say, example, 3 through 6. Okay, yep. Let's just give an example. Because most big leaguers, it's a two through six. They're just trying to stay off the corners.
Sure.
So again, they're going to move their plate depending on where they stand. But they're going to try to stay off the corners. But let's go 3 through 6 for right now. So that's, you know, let's keep with a right hander. That's middle in to middle away. Mm-hmm. So that's basically, that's the big part of the plate. Now, after that, I throw to them. This is what I call approach BP. I'm going to throw the baseball to them. And I said, you can only hit the ball between the 3 and the 6. As an example right here, what we're using. Because, it can just make sure everybody's on the same page. It can be any of those four.
Sure.
I'm just using 3 and 6 as an example. And so what this does, it starts to build a tunnel, a vision tunnel out towards the pitcher. So if you can imagine through those 3, 6 balls, you build out towards the pitcher. What that does is now your focus is better. Hmm. Now you have to pick up the ball sooner, right? Because now you have a more finite. You're not just swinging at anything that comes near. You know exactly where the ball needs to be. And it's not a postage stamp area. It's not one ball. We're talking 3, 4 baseballs. And so, again, two-thirds of the plate, but it's your two-thirds of the plate. So as you're building that tunnel out, your vision gets better because now you have to pick up. You have to find out where that ball is going early. If it stays in your tunnel, you know it's probably going to stay in your tunnel and be right where you need it to be, and you're going to be on time for that. But now all of a sudden, because your tunnel is all the way out to release point, when it leaves that tunnel early, it's an early and easy no.
Yeah.
Just as much as it's an early and easy yes, but only because you found out what part of the plate you like and you build that tunnel all the way out and you got your two eyes on it and you're being on time to hit a ball in your spot, your pitch recognition, your yes and no, ends up being right, you know, as close to release point as you can possibly get.
Well, I tell you what a great drill. I mean, I've been in a game 38 years. I've not heard that drill. I think it's outstanding. And boy, does it really, I mean, you're right, it increases their ability to focus. I mean, it actually makes them focus on that release point and track the ball better. Now, you take that, you know, obviously you're doing that in the off season, and then, you know, let's take batting practice since you're on this. During batting practice, is this a similar thing that they're going to be doing prior to games?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, not everybody's going to do it, but there's a lot of value in it. And the guys that find value in it for them, they will do it. Because here's the other thing about consistency and a purpose and a plan for every single thing that you do, whether it's baseball or in life. Again, these are life lessons that we're just learning through baseball. So if you're going to do something every day, you have a routine. We'll take this in the cage where you're only on flips or chair BP. You're only hitting pitches in your zone. Again, we're going to master your strengths. Because how many people out there, I'll raise my hand because I did it too, that 2-0 pitch right down the wheelhouse and you pop it up.
Yeah.
But in the cage, you crushed it. Another big part of why we're doing everything with a purpose and we're mastering our strengths, because in a game, as you know, we only get 3 at-bats at the younger levels. We get 4 or 5 at the higher levels. But that's only 9. So if I'm going to go up there and I get in those at-bats, I might only get 1. At the younger levels, I might get 2, maybe 3
sure.
in that zone. But I want to, I can't guarantee anything because it's a round ball and a round bat. Physics say that it's round on round. So right. You know, racquetball and tennis are really easy compared to this.
Yep.
But if I do it every day from front toss to chair BP to batting practice, then in the game, it's not new. I don't get excited. It's how you stay calm within the storm. It's how you stay you know, tension-free when your eyes get big. Well, you've seen that ball in your zone every single day. All those swings in the cage and approach BP during batting practice. That's why I call it approach BP, because you're practicing what you're going to do in the game.
Sure.
And so when you do it every single day, once comes game time, man, that's second nature because, again, you're doing it every day. I'm not saying you're going to be guaranteed a hit. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying that it's going to become natural for you. Therefore, you're going to have really good at-bats going back to you're not going to be chasing with less than 2 strikes. This approach, I don't think I mentioned, this is with less than 2 strikes. Mm-hmm. Because I always like to say, just because it's a strike doesn't mean you have to swing at it.
Right.
And this is a perfect example of, hey, what strike is yours? Let the pitcher have his. You want to master yours. And so, yeah, you can do it cage work, BP, do it all the way to the game, and then when it comes game time, it's second nature for you.
Now, during games, and you mentioned this about pitch selection, during the game, do you want them to right away be thinking counts, you know, whether it's 1-2, 1-1, 0-2, be thinking counts, location, pitch, how in-depth should a hitter get when it comes to that? Now, obviously, at the big league level, they've got a lot of information on pitchers, that, you know, but at young kids in high school, they don't have as much information. What's your recommendation there?
Yeah, kind of going back to like the simplify things, you know, hitting is simple, it's just not that easy. Yeah, in the big league level, your approaches are a little bit different depending on, like you said, your relationship with the pitcher, your history against him, maybe what he's doing during the game. Maybe he knows he doesn't have his curveball on today, so he's going somewhere else in a certain count. That's for that level. But up until that level, even the low minor leagues, I mean, everybody is playing in the fastball league. Even in the big leagues, you're playing in the fastball league. If you want to use the analytics, and I'm not a huge analytic guy, but we use them in with our guys, and you can use them for approaches and stuff like that, or understanding what's going on. But just take the analytics, pitchers throw over 50% fastballs.
Yeah.
In the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And some throw over 70%. Bartolo Colon throws over 80%. As we all know, too, it's a matter of where they're located, but it's a fastball league. So coming all the way up, I want young people to understand that you are training your swing to play against fastballs and high leverage fastballs. And again, as you grow, you'll get better. As your strength comes, it you know, don't, if you're 14 and you can't hit 86 miles an hour right now and you weigh 100 pounds, no panic. Don't worry. I was 160 pounds when I went to college. We didn't lift weights in high school. It was still taboo to lift weights. Only the basketball team, football team did. But, you know, for young people, be sure that you're working on a swing that can square up a fastball.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go on the plate with less than two strikes, and I wrote about it in the book, too, in depth of what's the easiest pitch for a pitcher to throw for a strike? A fastball.
Mm-hmm.
What are pitching coaches preaching? Establish the fastball.
Sure.
Great. Hitters, what's the easiest pitch for you to hit? A fastball. So we can learn so much from pitchers as hitters. I think the best pitching coach, best hitting coaches I've ever had were pitchers.
Yeah.
And I think I've told the story on our podcast one time, but if I may, just tell it real quick.
Absolutely.
Some people might remember this guy. Rick Wise was a pitcher.
Absolutely.
Back
Going
in
well.
The 70s.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, Michigan, I think he's still living in Michigan.
Yep.
But Rick was our pitching coach one year. And I was in this 3-for-51 slump with like 20-something Ks and struggling, but I had a lot to do with what we were talking about earlier, what I was swinging at, not so much my swings. And so I'm walking out for early BP, and Rick's in his office smoking his cigar. And this is back when he could use smoke. It's not that long ago, but it seems like a long time ago. But he goes, "Hey, Willie, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going out to hit." He goes, "Ah, you come in here." So I walk in his office and smoke all around, and he goes, "I want you to go and talk to our pitchers." I'm like, "What are you talking about, Rick?" He goes, "We're sick and tired of watching you swing at balls in the dirt with balls over your head.
Yeah.
We've been watching this for, you know, 2 weeks, a week and a half." Again, 51 at-bats, you're getting 4 at-bats a night. That adds up pretty quick. So
yeah.
It didn't take that long to get there. It wasn't like it took me two months. And I said, "Okay." He goes, "Don't worry. I'll tell the hitting coach you're not coming out. It's not your swing. I want you to go with this guy and this guy and this guy." One of the guys he sent me to had big league time as a closer at that point. He was down there for a little bit before he went back up. So I started going to him, and all of a sudden it was just like, wow, the click that I wasn't supposed to talk to in the beginning, meaning pitchers are over here, position players are here. I had wasted valuable time to get to know how to hit, not the swing, because I know what we're talking about here today, Pete, is knowing how to hit,
mm-hmm.
which is totally different than knowing how to swing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was learning how to swing up until that point that Rick pulled me aside. He's like, "Listen, son, you got to learn how to hit, or else you're not going to get anywhere." So talking to these pitchers of what they would throw me, I said, "Hey, so what would you throw me?" They're like, "Kev, we just throw you a changeup in the dirt, and you'd swing at it every time right now." And then I think back to him like, "Oh, my God, they're right." And so it was just this clarity, and like the weight of the world was off my shoulders. And I was in the lineup that night, and I went out, and I went 0-for-4, but I had three lineouts, and I rolled over one or popped up, whatever. I was 0 for 4, but man, that was the happiest 0 for 4 I ever got, because now I understood. I got back on the fastball. I lined three fastballs because I was in plus counts. I didn't swing at the changeups down low, because pitchers out there, if you want to get a switch hitter out, just throw them changeups, because we never have to stay back on the ball. We're divers, naturally. We never have to go lefty, lefty, righty, righty.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're out there, pitchers, and you face a switch hitter, just pull the string a little bit. You'll get us out easily. But for that, it was like I got back on the fastball, because that was my strength, as well as that was the pitcher's strength. I don't care if it was 98 or 90 or 85. So a lot of that stuff, too, going back to what we're talking about here, is learning how to hit and employing other people on your team, in this case pitchers, to really share with you how they would go about it. But it all boils down to, like, hey, they're throwing fastballs for strikes.
Yeah.
And your best pitch to hit is a fastball. So let's be less than two strikes. Let's see how many fastballs we can hit this week, and then on Sunday, look back and see how you did.
Well, Kev, I'll tell you what, you just gave me a great title for the podcast. We had one, but I think I'm going to change it. It's going to be Knowing How to Hit. You know, because you do keep it simple, you know, in a lot of ways, because, you know, we're so focused on the swing all the time. And I know growing up, you know, most of the instructors I had were focused on the swing. I was focused on the swing as a hitter. And then I realized that after a while, you know, it wasn't about the swing. It's a lot more than that. So I really recommend highly that our audience around the world go to Amazon, get the Good Batting book. You're going to... Listen, we hit certain topics. Every topic could have been a podcast. And that's what's tough about podcasts sometimes. There's so much information that Kevin has. So, you know, we've given you a lot of it for free, but go ahead. I think it'd be a great, great investment. Go to Amazon, get the Good Batting book. It's outstanding. Now, listen, we're coming to the end, unfortunately. And at the end, what I'd like to do is open it up to you to kind of give advice in general, anything we missed that you really felt was important that our audience needs to know. That's your time. But before we do that, I'm going to throw you a little curveball, which you know, you're a pretty good hitter, so I'm sure you can hit this one really well. On the show, we have a lot of volunteer coaches. Now, we've announced yesterday, Monday, our new podcast, Baseball Outside the Box, that only airs on Monday, specifically for volunteer baseball coaches, which is the largest baseball coaching organization in the world. Even though they're not organized, the volunteers are the largest and they're the most important. And Kevin, I've always talked about the volunteers being the foundation of the sport. It's where, you know, you keep the kids in the game longer. It's where they're going to learn. And if we don't help our volunteers who give their time, who are dedicated to the sport, who love working with the kids, but it's not their full-time job, if we don't, as professionals, really lend a hand there, that the game's just not going to grow the way you want it to grow. Kids are going to quit. And we see that statistically in the last 15, you know, 10 years. 12-year-olds and under have quit at the alarming rate of 10% every year. Now, the reason I brought that up was because this is going to be related to that coach who is that volunteer, who doesn't have the practice time, who doesn't have the fields, the equipment, all that stuff. And I know you've worked with a lot of young kids. Just what I want to do is just briefly, best you can, give them the best advice you can on working with their kids. Because remember, they got 12 of them. They're by themselves, or they have two coaches. Give them an idea of what are the things on hitting they should be focusing on in those short periods of time in practice.
Certainly. I just want to thank those volunteers first and foremost, because I thank you for volunteering your time. I think, number one, whatever the reason is that you're doing it, hopefully it's for a good reason or else you wouldn't be volunteering, I trust. But first and foremost, understand why you're doing it. Take a second and understand why you volunteered. Because if we put the why at the forefront, much like I think I told you in the beginning, that my why is to help others.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happen to help big league guys now. But again, for all these years, I've helped young people. And when I go speak and do KWB experiences at high schools and colleges and academies, I still work with young people. But my why is to help others. Help others become a better person. Help others find a joy in what they're doing. Because passion, it's fleeting. It comes and goes, in my opinion. We can get real passionate about something real quick, and then all of a sudden, a week later, we're not as passionate. Sometimes that kid is real passionate because he got a brand new glove and he's ready to go to the field. But if he had a bad experience with a coach, he's not really passionate about it anymore. So it's not about passion as much as how much joy can you bring to that practice, to that environment, to that young person, because chances are he's not going to play professional baseball. But you want him to look back and enjoy his time because, you know, 30 years from then, he's probably turning around and maybe he's volunteering. Maybe he's coaching. And you want him to have a good experience as a player so that he can have a very good experience impacting the next generation.
Uh-huh.
And so understand why you're doing it. Take a moment to understand why. And if it's to help others or something along those similar lines, put that as your North Star. Continue to look at that, teach by it, lead by it, lead by that example. The second thing for me is, even if you're by yourself, and I've done this before, you're by yourself and you've got 8, 9, 10, 12 kids, keep things moving. Have a little bit of an organization to your practice. I'm not saying that you kind of lay out a practice plan like they do at the next level or colleges or even high schools. Just have an understanding of what you want to get out of it. You know, even if it's a hatter, mother, they're hitting off the tee, which is very much, they can accomplish that. Give them stuff off the tee or toss or front toss or sitting on a bucket in front of them, chair BP, something that grows their confidence, something that's not too challenging. Because especially at the younger levels, I'm talking 8, 9, 10 right now.
Yep.
You want them to come back. Uh-huh. You want them to feel like they can actually do something. And so in terms of hitting, keep things moving. A couple swings off the tee. Get yourself a bunch of tees. I'm a huge Tanner tee guy.
Uh-huh.
Get yourself, guys, a bunch of tees. Line them up if you're the ones there. Only one there, rather. And don't spend a half hour on the tees. You know, whether it's they get 5, 6 swings each, boom, move to this, you know, with front toss or side toss or chair BP, put some guys in the field where you're working on fielding and hitting, but constantly move it. I remember kind of jogging my memory right now, and I used to work with some teams in the academy setting. I would hit off the tees for a little bit, then I'd have them run the bases.
Mm.
And learn how to touch the base. They love doing that.
Yep.
You know, as people know, kids love to run. So
yep.
Run them.
Yep.
And then come, but teach them. Like, what part of the bag to hit, boom. And they take one lap around or two, boom, boom, back on the tees, hit. And then they run them again. And, you know, talk about, line them up at second. And then come home. And, like, little things like that. Boom, you're done with that. Go back to front toss or side toss. So not to kind of get into a whole practice, but keep it manageable.
Sure.
You don't have to do a whole lot of stuff. Don't keep them there for an hour. They're going to be losing interest. Even if it's a volunteer at a Babe Ruth level or a Pony League level or, you know, 13, 14, 15, keep it short, keep it organized, and make sure that these guys are learning the fundamentals of the game. And if it seems like you're just having catch and playing game of 21 and hit the guy in the chest, and that's not fun enough, like, or that's not a new invention or a shiny object, well, you know what? If you can't catch, you can't play.
Yep.
You can't square up the baseball, you can't play. So I guess that's the abridged version of it.
Outstanding. Welcome, Derek Lee, Bobby Stevens. I know you guys have been on for a while. Thanks for listening to Baseball Outside the Box live on Facebook with Kevin Wilson, former national team coach, gold medal coach with the 18U that won, and I say former, he's still involved with USA Baseball. He just was one of the coaches and the hitting coach on the gold medal team, the 18U, and also works with professional hitters at the minor league and major league level for over 20 Major League Baseball organizations. All right, Kevin, sorry, but we're coming to that end, but here's the part I just want to end it on. Anything you could think of that, and I know your book has a lot of information, but let's give them the best one. The one thing you could think about to all our coaches and players and parents around the world, some last-minute advice. We already told the audience we'll have it on our social media. Kevin Wilson's at kwbaseball.com is the website, and his Twitter is at kwbaseball. So any last-minute advice?
I think, again, do it. Coach for the right reasons. Your coach the person first and the player second. You know, make sure that your young player that you're working with, even if he's 25, make sure that you're pouring into them, that you are helping them find their why they're playing. You know, whether it's because I like to play with Johnny, he's my buddy. Great, awesome. Because we're not going to get the hit every time. not going to win every ball game, but pour into them and make them a better person, because they're going to turn into a better adult if you do that. And also understand that, you know, that winning, like we talked about, winning isn't everything. Embrace the failure. Give them permission to fail with a plan in place to get better. And knowing that the only way I'm going to get better is if I fail. And last, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, if it's okay. This kind of plays right into, for coaches out there, a thing that I'm very near and dear to me and very passionate about and still passionate about. And very, it's a huge why, and it's a purpose in my life, is the Cannonball Foundation. The Cannonball Foundation, we run a Cannonball Fellowship for coaches every August in Boston. And what we do is we bring coaches from all over the country, high school, college. We have plans of doing for Major League, Minor League staff. But it's more of a retreat for coaches to find out and dig deeper into the person. Okay, why am I doing this? How can I get myself better? Because as coaches, and this is a daily practice for me, if I don't get myself better, I have no chance of getting a player better. Because if I pour into myself with books or mentors, people I lean on, I have no opportunity to continue to pour into others. So the Cannonball Foundation, which is thecannonballfoundation.org, you can visit. We do, I think, a really good job of bringing guys in that maybe are on the fence that say, okay, why am I doing this? How can I be a better coach? And it's not X's and O's. It's not launch angles, and it's not a coaching clinic as much as it's a retreat for coaches to find out how can I get better myself in order to pour into my players and ultimately get them to perform on the field better because now they believe in themselves more. So,
well, during this podcast, I've been keeping score, you know, so right, I'm going to make it an E for the host of Baseball Outside the Box because I had the cannonball.org on my agenda, and obviously I dropped the ball on that. So that's E for host, and I think I got a few E's as I listen to the show. I'll get better and better, but we will have that, Kevin, on our show notes on the website, and we'll encourage all our listeners to go to the website. Hey, listen, this was outstanding. And, you know, again, it could have been a 10-hour show. This was really, really good. I really thank you for being on the show, my friend. I hope you have a great summer, and maybe we'll have you back on the show again in the off season.
That's great. It's always a pleasure. Grateful for the opportunity, and thank you to all the listeners who tuned in. It means a lot to me, and I'm a nobody, so I'm just trying to spread the message, and I'm trying to help at least one person today. So hopefully our show today, Pete, helped at least one person out there.
All right, Kevin. God bless you, man. Talk to you soon. And to all our listeners, that was Kevin Wilson, extremely modest. He is one of the better hitting guys anywhere in the world. He is a sought-out speaker. People love the Good Hitting book, which you can get on Amazon. You go to his website, kwbaseball.com. Go to Twitter. He's got some great insights and great terms. He's got some all kinds of information when it comes to baseball development. His Twitter is KW Baseball Outstanding. So that was a great show. To all our listeners, you are the ones that make this show happen. We really appreciate it. Thanks to all our Facebook friends out there. Thanks to Kevin Wilson. Before we end the show, we want you to know that go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. On the website, we've got our new show that will air July 17th. The introduction is up right now, but it will air July 17th every Monday. That show specifically for volunteer baseball coaches around the world and in the U.S. These are the people that give their time for free, who work with all our young players. That is the largest baseball coaches group around anywhere in the world. It's the group that's going to keep kids in the game longer. It's going to get kids to play, to have fun. We have to help them as best we can. They're giving their time. It's up to us to give our time now to help them as much as possible. That podcast is going to be unique because it's going to interview volunteer coaches. We're going to find out from them what are some of the things that they struggle with. We're also going to learn from them a lot of things that they do because they have done a lot of things that have worked with young kids. And a lot of volunteer coaches are going to be able to listen to the show because they're going to listen to their peers, the ones that are on the field working with those young kids that only have one or two coaches, lack fields, So it's going to be a great show. We're also going to bring your experts on, so you're going to be able to talk with the expert and the volunteer coach at the same time. It's going to be a great show. We're looking forward to it. Again, July 17th, every Monday will air. And our show here still airs every Thursday, Baseball Outside the Box. Don't forget, go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com, our Facebook, facebook.com, Baseball Outside the Box. Email me, info@baseballoutsidethebox. We want to thank, again, Kevin Wilson. We want to thank all our listeners. You guys are fantastic. You were on for a long time, and we really appreciate it. Don't forget to share the show with everybody on your show's social media outlets, so that way the show can get out there even more. Finally, remember, coaches education is the key to building the foundation of our sports. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love the challenge of status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.